just to... I've been speaking here and there, where I've been traveling, on Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Lord Vishnu. And it's most suitable to do here in the presence of Pitamaha Bhishma Dev, who spoke these thousand names to Yudhishthira on the bed of arrows. And we see he's present here like that. So, name 123. Krishna's got many names. Mahatapa. Tapa literally means heat. It's usually associated with austerity. Maha means great. But here the commentators, they give the primary meaning of tapa here as knowledge, based on a statement of Mundaka Upanishad, yasya jnanamayang tapaha, whose tapas, whose heat, or whose austerity, penance is a better word than austerity, whose penance is of the nature of knowledge. So, different commentators have stated that the Bhagawan Vishnu, he doesn't perform austerity. He's enjoying. Sometimes, in the form of Nara Narayana, he performs penance for the sake of instructing the people of the world. But he is the supreme enjoyer. But he gives the process of penance by which all activity, all activities worthwhile in this material world may be affected. This whole material creation is brought into being by Brahma, being instructed by Vishnu to perform tapasya, which provides, that is the medium by which Vishnu awards knowledge to Brahma, by which knowledge of great potency, knowledge and potency, by which he can effect the creation. So any worthwhile activity in this world, any momentous activity that requires, there should be some penance. It doesn't come into being just by wishing it. There's the wishful thinking of certain people who write books on wishful thinking, that you simply imagine that you're a billionaire, and you every morning when you get up, you say, I want to be a billionaire. And then one day you wake up and you're a billionaire. But it doesn't happen like that. Or you imagine that the cloud is vanishing, and it vanishes. But these are all fairy stories. But the person who writes the book maybe becomes a billionaire if he sells enough copies. But otherwise, just by imagining it, it doesn't happen. There has to be a lot of hard work. And even then it may not happen. There are many, many people who want to be billionaires who work very hard, and still it doesn't happen. But if at all it is to happen, if at all there is to be any worthwhile endeavor in this material world, then it requires penance. One has to deny oneself what he immediately desires, and one has to take great effort. So this is the order of the world. Even if someone is born with natural ability, there are some rare cases of born genii, like Brahma. Even he had to perform penance. But it's not everyone who can become Brahma, but he was able to do so because in previous lives he had performed the duties of the varnashram, particularly as a brahmana, very stringently for many lifetimes. So even someone who's born with many abilities, that is carried over from efforts in a previous life. And the one who awards the result of that is Krishna. So someone may be very proud of their abilities, but they should know that, or someone may say, I have worked very hard. I'm a self-made man. I did it all by myself. I started off with nothing, and now I'm self-made. But we should know that even if you put in so much effort, the awarder of the result is Bhagavan, Vishnu. It's not possible simply by our own endeavor to get any result. But if there is any result, that is because he awards it. So, another meaning of this, tapa, means also distress. So, he also causes distress to those who deserve it. Why is there suffering in the world? Means there can't be any God, because if God was good, he should have made me happy. He should have filled up my bank account. That's what Woody Allen said. He said, I would believe in God if he made some sign. I'm waiting for a sign for God, like putting $1 billion in my bank account. That was one of his jokes. Just a joke. So, but he actually gets distressed for making such distasteful comments. So why is there suffering in this world? Well, we bring it on ourselves. And the ultimate arbitrator of what we get is Bhagavan. So he also, for those who cause distress to others and to themselves, he also awards distress. Although, that's one side, but generally we emphasize that the knowledge that he gives, he gives all kinds of knowledge. This will come up in one of the, just in the next verse, the name Veda. He gives all kinds of knowledge to human society, but the main knowledge he gives is knowledge to guide people to come out of their distress, to come out of their suffering that we have been in since time immemorial. So he's mahat also means that which is respectable or worshipable. So he is worshipable for that. So that's one name, mahat tapa. So the next verse. Sarvaga sarvavidbhanu vishvakseno janadanaha vedo veda vid avyango vedanga veda vid kavihi. So name 124 is sarvaga, one who goes everywhere or reaches everywhere. And name 125 is sarvavit. So these are quite, they're interrelated. He is everywhere, sarvaga. He can go anywhere. There's no place where he cannot go or where he does not exist. Sarvata parnipadam tat sarvatokshi shiro mukham. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, speaking about himself, says that his hands and legs and faces, they're everywhere. So he's everywhere, he sees everything, he knows everything from all perspectives, inside out, upside down, back to front. He sees everything and knows everything. And therefore a devotee can see Krishna everywhere. One who desires to see Krishna can see him everywhere because he is everywhere. And often people who are doubtful, they say, well, have you seen God? That very question presupposes that the very nature of God is that he's everywhere. It's just like if someone is to ask me, have I seen the president of Vietnam? If there is, I suppose there's a president or a prime minister or something like that. So no, it's not very likely that I've seen him because he's probably most of the time in Vietnam and I've never been there. So you probably have to go there to see him. So it's not very likely that you see him. Have you seen God? Well, where do you have to go to see him? He's a long way away. So it seems very unlikely to see him. But the question, have you seen God, presupposes that the very nature of God is that he's everywhere, and wherever you are, you can see him if you have the eyes to see him. So that also presupposes that one has to have the eyes to see him. One has to have the purity to be able to perceive him everywhere. And that also means that he is everywhere, he knows everything, means that he is quite capable of reciprocating with his devotees. That wherever one may be, one can chant Hare Krishna. And you may think, well, Krishna's a long way away, I have to shout. But he is his name. Even if we think of Krishna, he's there to appreciate that. And Krishna, he reciprocates with his devotees in all situations. He also manifests himself particularly as the deity so that we can dress him, offer food to him, sing for him, and perform various services for him. But he is everywhere. And those who are most advanced devotees, they perceive his presence everywhere and in everything. And that's why also when Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad, where is your God? Where is your Vishnu? Is he in, you say he's everywhere, is he in this pillar? And Prahlad answered, yes. And Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to prove Prahlad wrong. And Nrisimhadev proved Hiranyakashipu wrong. He was in the pillar. Now he may say, well, he must have quickly jumped in there to make Prahlad's word correct. But actually he was there, maybe not specifically manifesting that form, but he can manifest Nrisimha form or Varaha form or whatever form he likes at any time or any place because he is present everywhere. We know there are the three phases of the Absolute, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Paramatma, we shouldn't think that that's some lesser form. To only understand Paramatma, that is a lesser realization. But the Vishnu form who is in every atom, in every heart, can fully manifest himself at any moment. It fully manifest means he can manifest various forms. Now, we also sometimes find that, well, an instance is that of Gajendra, that Vishnu came rushing in from Vaikuntha on the back of Garuda. Why didn't he just appear there? Why did he have to come from Vaikuntha? Well, that's his wish. He appears in different... He may come from a distance, even though he's right there. He's right. He could have just manifested himself right there on the spot, but he came on Garuda. That is his wish, just to show that he is hearing the prayers of Gajendra, even from a very long distance, and he's immediately rushing to come and save him. So according to his desire, he may manifest himself immediately, or he may come from any distance. He is everywhere, in everything, in every atom, in every element. He sees everything from every direction. Another meaning of sarvaga means he has the strength to be able to support everything. One who reaches all, he has the strength to support everyone. So this, and with that strength, he reaches out to all, to the whole universe, and sucks it into himself at the time of the dissolution of the universe. And then he supports all living beings within himself without even the slightest effort. And in this way, he also reaches, all the living beings are with him during the time of cosmic dissolution and devastation, and when there's in between the dissolution of the universe and the recreation. So name 125 is Sarvavit. So some of these names there are very similar. Ganamayam, one who has got all knowledge, but one who, Sarvavit means one who knows everything, which is one very distinct difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Jiva. We should discuss this and understand this. In material existence, we are all in the illusion of being far more, of thinking ourselves to be far more important than we actually are. And we tend to think that we know a lot more than we do. And we may be very proud of our knowledge. Just like yesterday I picked up that book by Stephen Hawking. And on the back, it was the reviewers. We have a glimpse into the mighty intellect of Stephen Hawking. And he's considered the super brain, who in the Western culture, if they had the tradition of offering arati, they would do so to him. Of course they don't, but they write reviews of, we have a glimpse into his mighty intellect. What mighty intellect? He doesn't know anything. I know much more about the universe than Stephen Hawking does, because I read Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, who tells us, yeah, I do. Any one of you can also. If you just understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, and you're a much bigger scientist than Einstein. He's only speculating. He has no idea what's actually going on. And we get from Bhagavad Gita, maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetuna anena kondaya jagat viparivartite. One verse. Krishna is overseeing all the universe with all the living beings and non-moving and non-moving beings. There you go. That's it. What I just spoke is far more knowledge than all the atheistic scientists put together. They don't know. I know. That's a fact. So, Krishna knows everything. We cannot know everything. We can know everything by Krishna's mercy, but even then we can't know everything in the same way that Krishna knows everything. Just like you can become an expert cosmologist by knowing one verse of Bhagavad Gita. That's all. But all the details, of course, you could study much more and know details more, and then you become more expert. But even the knowledge that Krishna gives in the Vedas, Puranas, or knowledge of the universe, even then, we can only know to some extent. But Krishna knows everything in all respects. Just there may be some little fermentation going on in my stomach. Krishna knows how it's, he knows everything about how it's going on. I don't know. He knows. I may have some health problem, go to the doctor, he does some tests. He might know from doing the tests, he can speculate on, or he might actually know, and sometimes they know actually what's wrong with you. Sometimes, a lot of times they don't. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But Krishna knows. He knows every little cell and every little atom that's moving. And our scientist friends, they may know something. Oh yeah, on the back of that book also, the Briefer History of Time, which is the new edition and abridged edition of the Brief History of Time, it says, augmented by the latest research. Prabhupada caught them out on that statement that, yes, now we have more research. That means that previously, this highly lauded book, The Brief History of Time, that means actually he didn't really know what he was talking about, but now they've done more research, so now he knows a little bit better what he's talking about. Well, they'll do more research, and he'll do more research, and they'll find out, well, actually that was all wrong. And we have to make a new theory. So like that, they're just blind men, or with a little vision, and they augment that with a telescope, and they look out at that, and then they make some mathematical equations, and it looks very good, but they don't really know. Some years ago, I saw in a magazine that among astrophysicists, there are about 2,000 theories as to the nature of the origin of the universe. And then I thought, how many astrophysicists are in the world? There can't be many more than 2,000 anyway. They all have different theories. One devotee I know, she's an astrophysicist, PhD. If you hear that, you're saying, oh, that's astrophysics, PhD. So the first time she heard a devotee speak, the devotee said that these astronomers, they don't know anything. And she's an astrophysics PhD, and she told me, she thought, how does he know? But Krishna knows. That's the point. We're not here particularly to bash the scientists, although it is a lot of fun to do so. And it's necessary also, because we tend to think they know a lot more than they do, than they actually do. But Krishna knows everything. And if we want perfect knowledge, we have to go to Krishna. We cannot know to the extent that Krishna knows. That is not possible. But the overall picture we can get from Krishna. Krishna is the supreme controller. We are spiritual living beings. We are all his eternal servants. We are in this material. We are meant to be happy eternally with Krishna. We are in the material world due to misuse of the minute independence that Krishna has given us. We have to take up the process of bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, to revive our natural state of Krishna consciousness, and then we can go to Krishna and be happy again forever. This is perfect knowledge. What I just said to you, and I'm not saying it out of pride because it's not my knowledge, but what I just said to you is far better knowledge than anything you can get in all the schools and universities in all of America and all of the world put together, because they don't teach these things. They'll teach you all different things about the world, how different snails are crawling. You could do a PhD in the locomotive habits of snails. You could. I'm sure. Maybe someone's already done one. There are all kinds of things you can do PhDs on. You have to do a lot of study. But it all comes to one very big zero if we don't understand the actual knowledge that needs to be understood about our existential position, who we are, who is the supreme controller, what is our relationship with him. So that perfect knowledge Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yomam eva samudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajatimam sarva bhavena bharata. Krishna said, this name we're discussing, sarvavid, one who knows all. Krishna says, One who understands me as the personality of Godhead, without doubting that, such a person is the knower of everything and the he's Sarvavit. And the symptom of that is that he worships Krishna. So Krishna is the supreme Sarvavit. He knows everything directly and indirectly in all details. And we can become all-knowing in a lesser capacity, because we can never become as knowledgeable or as great as he is, but we can know everything of what we need to know by his mercy. So this is an important point to understand, that he knows everything. Krishna knows everything in the material world, in the spiritual world, what is going on, why it's going on, how it's going on. He sets up the systems by which it's going on. He is all-knowing. The next name, name 126, is Bhanu. Bhanu, which means one who shines, one who illuminates. So this is a common name for the sun, S-U-N. Bhanu. It's also one of the names of one of the many sons of Krishna, S-O-N-S. Bhanu. So Krishna himself is the one who shines. He illuminates all. Oh, whatever light is there, the sun is shining so brilliantly. There's a tremendous source of light within the universe. That light comes from Krishna. That light is only a glimmer of the light that is Krishna. And there are unlimited brahmandas or universes, and there's sun shining in each one, and that light comes from Krishna. So Krishna is all light, and Krishna is often compared also to the sun. Krishna Surja Shama Maya Hoy Ondaka Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Adhika. Krishna is just like the sun. And the illusion of ignorance in this material world is just like darkness. So what is darkness? Darkness is the absence of light. Darkness is defined in terms of light, absence of. Something may be, sometimes we say very dark. That means that there are degrees of darkness. So when it's very dark, you have your finger in front of your face, you can't see it even. That's a complete absence of light. So Krishna is just like the sun. We can choose to be in the light, or we can choose to be in the darkness. We can choose to be with Krishna, or we can choose to live in the darkness. Tamasima jyotirgamaya. Come out of the darkness, come to the light. The light of the sun is there for everyone, but there are some creatures who prefer darkness. Owls, bats. The bat will go into some dark cave or crevice during the daytime and likes to come out at night. The bat doesn't like the light. The owl doesn't like the light. The owl doesn't like to see the sun. So Krishna is always bright. And we can also be bright if we come into the light of Krishna consciousness. We have to choose whether we want to live in the light or live in the darkness. There's some kind of philosophy, or what do they call that? Way of living? Positive thinking. Be bright. Just be bright. And everything will be okay. Well, you can think like that if you like, but however bright you may be, look on the bright side. Life is wonderful. But unfortunately, however bright and positive you may be, there are certain problems in this world, such as birth, death, old age, disease, hunger, famine, pestilence, and so on, which, however positive you may be, however much a positive thinker you may be, we have to suffer this. Krishna doesn't suffer. There's no suffering for Krishna. He's always bright, and Krishna invites us to come with him to the brightness of his world where there is no suffering, there is no misery. Simply by imagining that everything is wonderful, look on the bright side, the essence of Bhagavad Gita, whatever happened was good, whatever is happening, all rubbish ideas. So actual brightness means to come into the light that Krishna gives. Krishna gives the light of knowledge, jnana deepa. Teshame vanu kamparatama hama jnana jang tamaha nashyami atma bhavasto. Jnana deepena bhasvata. We are in the darkness of ignorance. But for those who approach Krishna, he is the light of knowledge by which they can. He gives them the knowledge which is the illumination by which they can see him and see and thus see everything else. So this sun within the universe, at some point in time, it will cease to exist. But Krishna will never cease to exist. Krishna is the ever-shining sun. And we can also take these two names, the name prior to this, together with Bhanu. So Sarvavid Bhanu, one who shines in the knowledge of everything. So that he illuminates everything by giving knowledge of everything. There are so many verses. That one from Bhagavad Gita, what is that? About the sun that illuminates everything? No, I'm not remembering. Jnanena tutaragyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha jnanena tesham adityavajjnanam prakashyati tatparam. Krishna says when one is illumined, but by this knowledge, when one gets actual knowledge, it illuminates everything just like the sun. And just like the sun destroys all darkness, so all ignorance is destroyed when we get the actual knowledge that Krishna gives. So, name 127, Vishvaksena. Vishvak means all-pervading, and Sena means army. So, Krishna is everywhere, and just as in a battle, if one party is surrounded by the other, then they're as good as lost. So, those who are antagonistic to Krishna, they cannot stand against Krishna. It's not possible. Krishna's surround. If one wants to be antagonistic to Krishna, there's no hope of being successful. Krishna directly and indirectly, so he has his associates and energies. We cannot escape. We cannot escape from Krishna. We can pretend he doesn't exist. We can mock Krishna. We can make philosophical theories to pretend that there is no supreme controller, but we are surrounded. We can't escape. Krishna also, he has his various demigods and various energies. No one can stand against Krishna, however powerful one may be. One may be so so powerful, like Hiranyakashipu, all the rest of the people in the universe, they were no match for him. They couldn't stand against him. But Krishna easily destroyed him. So, also those who are antagonistic to Krishna, Krishna attacks them from all directions, in all ways. One may be for some time apparently very powerful, but eventually in all ways, everything about everything, all their plans, all their acquisitions, all their property, all their abilities, they're all destroyed. Someone may have a very strong body that is destroyed in course of time. Someone may have what others consider to be very great intelligence that is destroyed. Just like I was saying, Stephen Hawking, he will have to die, and then in his next life, there's no guarantee he'll be so intelligent. He has such misused intelligence anyway. So Einstein, where is he now? What happened to that intelligence? It's all destroyed. So better not to be against Krishna. It doesn't make sense to try to combat someone who is so powerful that there is no hope of our being able to overcome him. Actually, the natural tendency of the soul is to love Krishna. But even if we are, if we have this out of madness, we have an attitude of dislike to Krishna, that's not a very good policy. Not a very intelligent policy. Better to surrender to Krishna. He attacks all that is wrong and bad from everywhere. He can overcome. We shouldn't think that bad will prevail. Ultimately, Krishna will prevail. Of course, in Kali Yuga, all that is wrong has got special impetus. But by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's another wave, the wave of Krishna consciousness. So, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. That which is real, that which is true, that which is actual, that will continue to exist. And that which is artificial, wrong, and bad, that cannot remain. Of course, the material world will go on, but no position in this material world can remain forever. Either individually, individuals die, empires, they fade away, even the whole material universe is destroyed in due course of time. But Krishna and Krishna consciousness, they remain eternally. So, Bhanu is the previous name, the sun. So we should always remain in the sunlight of Krishna consciousness. Keep moving with the sun keeps on moving. So we have to, in this material world, we have to move. Gacchati ti jagat, that which moves is called the jagat, is called the world. So if we move with the sun, remain in the sunlight of Krishna consciousness, then we'll never be in any bad situation. We'll always be protected by Krishna. Another meaning of Vishvaksena is that his associates are stationed throughout the universe for its protection and its maintenance. This universe is overseen by the demigods who are devotees of Vishnu. And Krishna sends great devotees into this world to convey his message. So, in this way, Krishna is, even if we think, well, Krishna, he's just one person, but he has so many powerful associates also. So, it really makes a lot of sense to surrender to Krishna. Just like I heard in the 1980s that one minister in the Danish government, this was during the time of the Cold War, he suggested that they keep an, instead of having an army, they keep enough money in their defense account to send a telegram to Moscow, we surrender. Because there's no way that they could resist the Red Army. So it makes sense to surrender to Krishna. Of course, by the ever-changing combinations of this material world, there is no Red Army anymore, at least not in Russia, still in China, I guess. But that whole situation changed. But for those of us who are thinking of resisting Krishna, I don't think there's anyone here, otherwise you wouldn't be here if you didn't like Krishna. So we should know that we cannot resist Krishna. So better to be attracted to his irresistibly sweet and kind nature than to try to resist his strength, because we are like very, very tiny beings, and Krishna is far more powerful than us. And he's willing to give us protection if we simply seek that protection. So why try to resist him? If we try to resist Krishna, we have to suffer. And if we surrender to Krishna, then we enter the ocean of transcendental bliss. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever not to be Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna. That's all I'll say now, unless there's any question about this. Yes, please. No room for any pride. Yeah, we don't know how food is digested. Of course, we could. Biologists and physiologists, they can study these things so they can get more idea. We swallow something and some glands, they eject some acids. Yeah, even if you do know, it's beyond your control. Well, you could modify it if you like, if you're stupid enough to do so. I mean, you could drink a whole bunch of bleach just before you eat your meal. That would upset the digestive process rather severely. I don't recommend it. I'm just saying a hypothetical case. Yeah. And then how do we know anything? How does the eye see? Well, that's a topic for neurophysiologists and neuropsychologists and philosophers. But we don't have to worry too much about the details. How do we know? Krishna? So, what is that? Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matasmriti gyanam apohanancha. Krishna, he's in everyone's heart and he gives knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. So how do we know? We don't have to go through a whole big psychological analysis and try to, what is knowledge? And we see something and it comes in and turns upside down and then gets straightened out again or something and all this kind of thing. So we're told. And it's all, there's this black stuff in your eye and it's all got something to do with it. I can't remember. I was half awake in a biology class about 40 years ago. Something like that. But anyway, Krishna knows, and what do we need to know for? It's just like you can study how the grass grows, that something else has half awakened. There's chlorophyll and sunlight and this and that. And the cow eats it and it turns into milk. You don't have to know that. You just, you know, you don't have to know how the grass grows. Just feed it to the cow and then take the milk and offer it to Krishna and take milk and be happy. It's not necessary to know. We have this in modern life. We have to know more and more and more, and all these different psychological theories and then how to grow food better. That was the one of the great advances after the Second World War, right? The Green Revolution. And now look. Now look, what is the effect? Better just live simply and don't be overly complicated and chant Hare Krishna. And what knowledge is there in Bhagavad Gita, we can take it. No need to be such a complex society in which everyone's thinking in highly complex ways. And unnecessary. Of course, there may be some who, there are some people who may study this in depth. What is the nature of knowledge? They may do so, especially for the, there's no particular need to, but they may do so for the sake of combating others who make up stupid theories about all these things. So we also need in Krishna consciousness scientists and philosophers who can give the actual knowledge, because there are pseudo-scientists and philosophers who are screwing the whole of society up. So we also need in Krishna consciousness actual scientists and philosophers who can give the actual knowledge of what's going on in the universe according to Shastra. Otherwise, we can just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Otherwise, how do we know exactly what is the process of gaining knowledge? What is knowledge? All these questions. Okay. So many questions. How does a child learn? How do we learn? How does anyone learn? What is the process of knowing? How do you forget? Is it all something to do with the neurons? You have to take more of that, omega-3, and then your brain starts working better. That's true. But knowledge is not dependent on various neurological processes. It's not even dependent on having a brain. There are some rare cases of people who don't have any brain. They just have a complete hole. You know that? You've seen that? They just have a hole in their skull. Underneath the cranium, there's literally an empty space. And they just operate as normal human beings. They just have a little tiny thread of gray matter. So we're told, so we have heard in this strange world. Daksha had his head cut off and a goat's head put on, and he acted as a normal human being. Well, at least his intelligence functioned as previously. So there are many mysteries to the universe. No doubt. There's no end to the mysteries. Do you want to say something? Yeah. Yeah. One should not read books just for the sake of winning arguments. Yeah, not just to show oneself as a great scholar and to pose oneself, I'm better than you. Look at me, I'm so great. But for the sake of serving Krishna, we should oppose wrong theories that are misleading the world and give the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness. So for the sake of serving Krishna, we should understand, for the sake of benefiting the people of the world, we should understand what is right and what is wrong and propagate what is right. But to promote ourselves that is most despicable, in whatever way it may be. In the modern world, not only the modern world, but people are, they desire to be worshipped or to be a celeb, to show themselves. Because someone's a film star or someone's a rock star or a sports star, and then people laud them for their extraordinary abilities. But what is that? It's all misplaced. The propensity to worship others, which is the propensity to worship Krishna, is misplaced in worshiping people for quite useless or worse than useless activities. So, this desire that I shall be great, I shall be honored, this is, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Toma Pratishta Shukare Bhishta. This, if one has the desire to be honored by others, it is just like if you go up to a pig that's pooping and you rub that poop all over your body, that's about as good as desiring to be honored by others. It is condemned. Self-indulgence, acting in a way that others will, with the desire that others will praise me, is condemned. Yeah. Did I say? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, Maharaj, I was listening to you
talking about what? Sorry.
Science and research.
Yeah.
Yes. And I see what you mean about the speculation. I understand that. But now I'm thinking, for example, about highways. You know,
about highways?
Highways.
Yeah.
Yes. So how the construction is based on calculations. So that makes me think, okay, there was an application for that. So I think my real question is there a place, in your opinion,
how science can be used in Krishna's service? Well, in ancient Vedic culture, there is a very great science of geometry, which is used to calculate the establishment of the Yajna Kunda, or the pit in which the fire will go for making a fire sacrifice. And the Yajna Kunda may be of different shapes, so it has to be a certain size. But if it's of irregular shape, how will you calculate the size? That requires detailed knowledge of geometry. So that was there. Astronomy. There's developed astronomy. Even today you can use ancient Vedic methods to calculate what time the sun will rise tomorrow in Denver. So the science was there, but it was not used to promote wanton sense gratification and useless technology, but it was used to promote Vedic culture, an understanding of who is the person behind all of this. So certainly science has its place, but not for defying Krishna, for glorifying Krishna. Idang hi pungsas tapasas shrutasya vasvishtasya suktasya cha buddhidate yoho. What's the next line? Avichutarato kavibhya nirupita yaduta mashloka gunarna varnanam. In all science, art, culture, knowledge, penance, idanghi pumsa tapasa shrutasyava svishtasya sukta, recitation of Vedic hymns, all human endeavors, that should be aimed at glorifying He who is worthy of being most glorified, namely Krishna. Describing the qualities of Him. Gunarnu Varnanam. Chutartho Kavibhyani Rupataya. Hare Krishna. Another question. All right.
And the thought that comes to my mind is, say, you give the example of the owl, the bat, who likes to be in darkness and enjoys darkness. And same way, we can say a poison tree. It's dharma is to give poison, and an apple tree is dharma to give apple. So is it possible that there are some of us who are engineered not to be in light?
The question is, just like the bat likes to be in the darkness, so that is the propensity of the bat. So you could say, well, if a bat's like that, well, what's wrong with being a bat? Or are some living beings intrinsically bat-like or owl-like? No, a living being may acquire that propensity due to sinful activities. But that is not the permanent situation of the living being. We may enter a sinful body due to sinful propensities and sinful activities, but in due course of time, we have to come out of that situation and come to the real position of this, of the jiva, of the soul, is to be in the pure existence of Krishna consciousness. So, having attained such a body, the bat will seek all that is dark and nasty. But that is not the permanent situation. The jiva who is inhabiting that body, that is not his permanent situation. So it's not that, well, that's the Madhva philosophy, the Tamo Yogya, those souls who are only fit for going to hell. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us jivesvarup hoy Krishna nityadas. The inherent propensity of every living being is to eternally serve Krishna. So no one's a bat forever. Hare Krishna, I'll finish there now. Oh, I won't finish there now. There are more questions. Commonly asked question, why do we do bad things even though we don't want to? Atakena prayukto yam papam charati purushaha anichanapi varshneya balamiva niyojitaha. Why do we do bad things even though we don't want to? What's the answer? Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhava. So, the answer is that we are impelled by lower propensities. Or if we want to make more psychological analysis, there are deeply engraved sanskaras within the heart. Sanskara means impression or tendencies. They're very deeply rooted tendencies within the heart. So that is to be cleaned by cheto darpana marjanam. That is to be cleaned by the cleansing process of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. So we have to go on. Certainly it may seem very difficult to overcome the bad tendencies of that lower nature by which we're infected, but we have to go on with Krishna consciousness and not become discouraged because certain bad tendencies remain within our heart even after what we consider to be a long time. In Kali Yuga, we're used to instant coffee and then just hit a go like that, and then your TV comes on, and then you go like that, another channel comes on, and we're used to everything instant. But it may take many lifetimes to come to Krishna consciousness. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan maam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. It may take many lifetimes, even for someone who's endeavoring seriously to understand the Supreme Truth, to discover Krishna. So if after 15 years or 20 years or 30 years of these in this life, and we still have some lower tendencies, we shouldn't become discouraged and think, well, it's hopeless. It may take some time. We have to go on serving Krishna with patience. Utsahan nischya dharyat. Patience is required. What is that support? Krishna is our support. Krishna offers us support in the form of his instructions, his devotees. So just like we have to remain in the sun, we have to remain in association of devotees. We have to keep on with the practice of Krishna consciousness. You can say this as well as I can, I'm quite sure. You could answer this question as well as I. If someone else asked you this question, you could also explain it, isn't it? It's not difficult to understand, but it's a question of faith also. This is on the FAQ list. Pray to Krishna. Ai nanda tanuja kinkarang patitang maam vishame bhavam budhau kripaya tavapada pankaja stita dhuli sadrishang vichinta. You have to pray to Krishna. So I will finish this lecture and questions now. Hare Krishna.